This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave in for Terry Gross. The winner of this year's Kentucky Derby was a horse named Funnyside, a gelding, which is a castrated horse. So Funnyside won't be able to share the destiny of many champion racehorses, the life of a stud. A good stud can earn a fortune. And what a way to earn a living. As our guest Kevin Conley writes, the money is phenomenal, the sex is brisk and multifarious, and the settings are as green and unembarrassed as Eden. Conley is the author of the book Stud, all about the breeding of racehorses, from the intimate acts to the big business. It's now in paperback. Conley is an editor at The New Yorker. Terry talked with him last year. When he was researching his book, Stormcat was the top-paid stud, and he still is.
Stormcat, the top stud in 99 and 2000, was making, at the time I began this story, $300,000 for a date. And it's currently up to $500,000 this year, which means at a conservative estimate of 50 such dates a year, he's making $20 million a year. That's not counting the contracts that he has on the side, the long-term contracts with the farm that he has to honor, and various outside farms who realized early on that this was something worth getting in on.
Who would have suspected that sex could be quite that lucrative? How many offspring has Stormcat sired?
I'm not sure what the count is up to because this is foaling season, but mm-hmm. I think last year it was somewhere around 720. He's very valuable because of those 720, 93 have become stakes winners. Thoroughbred races are graded, and the top echelon of race is a stakes race, and those stakes race winners are very rare, and he sired 93.
Do you think if you sire that many horses that they'd become less valuable because there's so many of them?
Well, the value that Stormcat can give is not necessarily at the racetrack. This is kind of hard to grasp. You pay $500,000 really for the chance to turn around in another year and a half, 2 years, and sell him at a yearling, sell that foal at a yearling sale. And last year, Stormcat's foals, yearlings, sold for an average of $1.7 million. And that, I believe, was on a $250,000 or $300,000 investment. So people turned right around and made $1 million in change on their $300,000, $250,000 investment. And that's really why he's valuable. Now, people who want to get into the horse racing game know that Stormcat is the horse to go to if you want to get a real runner. So there are rich people lining up to get into the thoroughbred racing game. And that's another reason why it's valuable.
Well, why is a stud considered to be worth that much? I mean, I'm thinking that the performance of a horse probably has a lot to do with that horse's temperament as well as its genetics. Maybe the temperament is part of the genetics, but like for human beings, we think that the makeup of a human being is part genetic, but part a function of environment and chance. Wouldn't that be true for horses, too?
Absolutely. That's the argument against cloning. If you were to clone five secretariats, who knows how many would make it to the track. One might run into a fence and the other might have lead paint fall down into its feed bowl. And there's, of course, it's just like humans that winning at the races is not necessarily a matter of breeding the fastest horse. For a horse, the race is itself a social event, and they're paying attention to a lot of back and forth nonverbal signals about dominance and submission all the way through the race. Sometimes the race is won before the horses even get in the gate. And so breeding the horse to have that qualities is not just choosing the fastest mare and the fastest filly. You often are breeding for intangibles like temperament and aggressiveness, patience and intelligence, ability to avoid problems.
Does it matter to a horse in terms of its breeding and its ability to race whether it was born through artificial insemination or through an act of actual congress?
Yes. You can't be a thoroughbred unless you've been born by an act of sexual congress. All other breeds use artificial insemination. It's very helpful. It means that you can take a horse in Ohio and impregnate a mare in California or Vancouver. And what this does with thoroughbreds is this prohibition against artificial insemination means that the mares have to travel to where the stallions are. And in this country, the stallions, the highest concentration of stallions, the most valuable studs in the world, are all in about a 60-mile radius centered around Lexington, Kentucky. That's where Stormcat was, is. That's where a point given has retired. I would bet that 90% of the horses in the top 100 are in Kentucky.
I know that you've been to the places where the breeding takes place. Would you describe one of those places for us?
Well, they all look as beautiful as any English boarding school. At the top of the line farms, they have a colonnade of trees, beautiful Irish stone fences, slate roofs, oak barns. When you get to, say, Coolmore, Ashford Stud in Kentucky, even the hay seems to be art directed. There's so much money in the business that they're selling you the dream as well as the barnyard experience.
What happens when it's time for the mare and the stud to perform the act of congress? How are they like introduced? How do they get together?
Well, before the mare and this stallion, the valuable stallion, are introduced, there's a teaser stallion who has to come in and do his job. Now, the teaser stallion is there because the actual stallion is much too valuable to get kicked by a mare who isn't quite in the mood yet. So they bring some horse who hasn't been quite as good at the track. The stallions have these noble names like Stormcat or Dynaformer or Conquistador Cielo or Seattle Slough. And the teaser stallions have gas station type names, you know, Earl and Honcho and Coop and Skitchy. And they'll bring old Coop in and he'll try a jump. Often he wears a leather apron and something of the sort to make sure that he doesn't get too intimate with the mare. But when it's clear to everyone in the barn that the mare is not about to kick the prize horse flesh, who's probably waiting in the wings at this point, the poor teaser stallion is hauled off to get frustrated again tomorrow or maybe later in the afternoon, and the stallion steps in. The stallion pretty much believes that everything that walks through the breeding shed door is his. And by this point, he's heard some of the goings on, and he is ready to go, usually, if he's a professional with a high libido. And he, depending on his personality, different horses are different. Seattle Slough seemed to be very gentlemanly in his address of the mare, cautious to make sure that the teaser stallion had done his job correctly. He seemed to come up along the side and gently nuzzle her down her flanks and then take a tentative jump himself on his own. Of course, all of this is going on in the presence of six or more professionals who choreograph the event for efficiency, speed. There is a man or woman holding the mare's lead shank, somebody holding the stallion's lead shank. There's what's called a tail man who will pull the mare's tail back at the last minute. There is a stallion manager ready to guide the stallion home when he rears. And there are, of course, usually a vet or several other grooms in attendance in case they're needed. Some stallions are a little bit more leisurely about the act, and sometimes somebody will come from behind and kind of give him an extra push if he seems to be a little slow at his job. It's really, in its own way, a little like the New York City Ballet, very highly choreographed. And when it's done well, which it almost always is, it takes about 30 seconds, probably about an eighth of the time it's taken me to describe it.
Does there have to be any chemistry between the mare and the stallion?
Well, it's funny because there are definitely some stallions who have their preferences. The Seattle Slough seem to like gray mares, I was told. And when I went to visit a feral herd, which was a group of about 60 horses who had arranged themselves into different harems, each of the stallions, the harem stallions, seemed to have chosen according to his own preference. There was a stallion they called Hershey who seemed to prefer kind of chocolatey brown horses. There was another one who liked the kind of paint variety with dapple colors. And so, yes, they have their preferences, and they have their preferences often, and their moods. But the professionals in the breeding shed will make sure the job is done. Sometimes it will take 40 minutes, and generally it's pretty quick.
Does it seem like the mare or the stallion get any pleasure out of the act?
It's hard to know exactly.
I feel like such a voyeur talking about the horses doing this. it's odd to talk about.
It is very odd to talk about it, and when I first went down, I felt strange in actually being there. But everybody there was so comfortable. This is, you have to remember, million-dollar properties being created. This is a business, and mm-hmm. these are people whose job is to make sure that it's done well. And actually, I was more embarrassed about my embarrassment in the end than anything else.
So do the horses get any pleasure out of it?
Certainly the stallions seem to enjoy it. The mares seem to have a drive to reproduce that is quite strong. Most of the time, they could care less about the stallion. Pretty much 11 months of the year and 27 days. But during those 3 days or so of estrus, they couldn't be more come hither in their behavior.
Kevin Conley speaking with Terry Gross. His book Stud is now out in paperback. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back now to Terry's interview with Kevin Conley, the author of the book Stud, Adventures in Breeding. He's an editor at The New Yorker.
How do the owners know when the mare is going to be ovulating?
Well, that's one of the reasons why in the past 30 years or so, this business has become so much more lucrative than it used to be. For much of this century, stallion could only manage about 40 or so dates a year. But with a lot of the increase in the accuracy of pinpointing the ovulation that veterinarians can do, they've been able to know exactly when the mare is ovulating and hustle her right over to the breeding shed. So they've been able to double, triple, even quadruple in some cases that 40 a year. Last year's leading stud, Thunder Gulch, I believe, had 216 dates. Live covers, they call it in Kentucky.
And will the mare almost definitely get pregnant?
I think the standard is 60% conception rate.
Do you have to pay if your mayor doesn't get pregnant? Do you still have to pay the full
fee? Most of the contracts, and there are definitely a variety of contracts. Most of the contracts are for a guaranteed live foal, which means they will give you another chance until mm-hmm. you get pregnant, and you will pay the stud fee on the delivery of an animal, four legs on the ground.
Right. Meanwhile, let's back up a second. What happens to the teaser stallion who's brought out to arouse the mayor? Then the stallion's led away in frustration. Then what?
You know, I have to say that I really identified with the teaser stallions through it. They seem to have a lot of personality. And you know, I was, in my own life, I was more the guy who sat around and made the jokes and then went off to get a drink for somebody. And meanwhile, the moody and attractive man had left with the person I'd been talking with. And so the role of teaser stallions, I always wanted to follow them and find out what they do. They pretty much have a life that's filled with frustration. But when I visited the feral herd, I spoke with the woman who runs that research center, and she was actually a therapist for the dysfunctional stallion and used this feral herd as a kind of laboratory for the psychological health of the stallion. The stallion in the wild is always potent, always fertile, always healthy, and it's in the thoroughbred breeding farms that you find these strange problems. And one of the things that she told me was that as soon as a stallion gains access to the mare, his testosterone level skyrockets. And as soon as he's taken away, within hours, his testosterone level drops. And teaser stallions often spend the most time around the mares. They spend a lot of their day going around the broodmare barns, checking to see if the mares who live there are ready to ovulate, kind of giving a preliminary check. And so, strangely, it's the teaser stallions often who have the highest testosterone level on the farm. The stallions who usually live in seclusion, by themselves, often in a barn housed at night with the other stallions, but they're kept away from each other. They live like monks on their own because there is a belief that stallions are very aggressive. They are, in fact, very aggressive. And left to their own devices, these stallions would fight to the death.
So the poor teasers get no relief?
They very rarely do. The people who work at the barn often work most with the teaser stallion. In other words, the stallions will come and go, but the teaser is there for mare after mare, so that they feel kind of close to the teasers too. So they will make sure often that he gets a little fulfillment at some point. There are there's a strange thing. Many of the things that humans have a kind of analog in the horse world, and thoroughbred mares are often so nervous that they reject their foal, and the farm has to bring in a nurse mare, kind of like a nanny, to be a wet nurse for the expensive foal. And those nurse mares, contractually, have to be returned to their owner pregnant. And a lot of farms take pity on these teaser stallions, and it's the teasers who do the job of getting the nurse mares pregnant. So there is relief.
Well, here's the question I need to ask. How did all this horse sex affect your libido?
Well, now, I've spoken with a psychiatrist who treats a lot of horsemen down in Lexington, and I've heard that there's a certain jump that they get from being around a particularly prepotent sire, as they say. I can't really admit on national radio to any effect in my own personal life. I do have a 4-month-old baby.
So did watching the process of horse breeding affect your interest in horse racing?
Yes. I now pull for the youngins of the sires that I've seen in the breeding shed, definitely. It's very easy to get a kind of rooting participation, just interest in thoroughbred racing because of that.
Well, Kevin Conley, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Kevin Conley is the author of the new book, Stud, Adventures in Breeding. It's now in paperback. One of horse racing's biggest races, the Preakness, takes place tomorrow. I'm Barbara Bogave, and this is Fresh Air.